Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Go For It. I am your host, Paul Gannon. For the next 2 hours, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And, of course, as always, you will get a heavy dose of my opinion. And if you have an opinion, the number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgant. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgant. You can send messages to the show on Twitter, at GoForItGan. And while you're there on Twitter, give me a follow at GoForItGan. Expect to be joined by Derek Anderson, former NBA star. He's going to stop by. We're going to talk Game 7, obviously, Miami Heat, Boston Celtics. The world is watching tonight, and we're going to talk to Derek about that. We're also going to be joined by Carolina Panthers linebacker Thomas Davis, who's going to talk about his return from his third ACL surgery. Hopefully Thomas can make a comeback, but we're going to talk to him about his progress. And we're going to be joined in this first hour, and we're going to bring him in now, Hall of Famer, 11-time Pro Bowler, the one, the only, Willie Rofe.
How you doing today?
Doing all right. Thanks for joining us.
Good.
And Willie, obviously the world is truly watching tonight, and it's going to get started 8:30 tonight in Miami. Heat, Celtics, for it all. Trip to the NBA Finals on the line. What's your initial thoughts as what's your initial thoughts right now?
Well, you know, I mean, I'm looking forward to it. I've been a little disappointed with the Heat. You know, the way the game went 2 games ago. I mean, now we got to go to a Game 7, but it could have been. I understand why they didn't take care of business at home. I mean, you want to cheer for the Heat. You know, I want to cheer for the Heat. I wanted to see them do good. LeBron has played very well in the series. I mean, Dwayne Wade hasn't been himself. You know, Bosh is just not getting his feet wet, so that's good. He got to play a couple games. I do think the Heat can win this game tonight. But, you know, can I say for sure they're going to win it? No, I'm not going to say for sure they're going to win it because I feel like other than Rondo, I feel like the Heat should have had control of this series and it shouldn't be 7 games.
Well, let me help you out here for a second, Willie. I'm going to say Miami Heat's going to win tonight. I think what's happening here, I think the Miami Heat, I think sometimes they don't play with the sense of urgency that they need to play with. And I think also throughout the course of their series, give Boston a lot of credit. I mean, Boston has played well, but I think Miami Heat are the better team. I think they're flat out the better team, and they're going to show tonight. They're a better team. They have the home court advantage in Game 7. You almost have to favor them tonight.
Yeah, but we both know that, Paul. But the Heat just disappoint you so much because – we don't see them play the way they should. I'll put it like this, Paul. I've watched the Heat play shutdown defense sometimes, play great defense. We've watched the Heat play, you know, Wade and LeBron take over basketball games against Indiana and do their thing. You know, I don't think Spoelstra does the best job with what he does with his lineups because sometimes he won't put Anthony in the game. I don't know why Bosh didn't play in the second half of the game the other night, not the last game, but the game before. Just
game
his presence out there, Game 5 on the defensive end, just his presence out there, you know, nobody was guarding Kevin Garnett. He's running out of the middle of the court, all wide open, and you're not going to make any adjustments. So I don't know what Spoelstra's doing as far as his lineups, you know, his rotation, you know, what he's doing, but it's just frustrating to watch them because, you know, by this point in the playoffs, you got to know what you're doing. Now, I will say this. When they play Oklahoma City, Oklahoma City's going to know what they're doing. And it's not going to be like, you know, we're not going to know who's going to play and who's going to get the ball and stuff like that. So, you know, I mean, like you said, I think the Heat, I think LeBron has carried their team a lot, and I think he's carried them a lot this year. And if LeBron doesn't play the way LeBron is supposed to play, it's similar. It looked to me this year probably like similar to Cleveland. If LeBron doesn't step up and play like that, you know, I think they might have won that game in Boston, but they blew him out because LeBron played a great game and the guys followed. But you know, LeBron should with as many good players he got on the Heat team, LeBron shouldn't have to, you know, play like that every night. But we'll see what happens.
Right. I mean, and I just look at it right now with Boston. I mean, don't get me wrong. Boston, I believe, is the mentally tougher team here. But I think Miami's the better team. And I think the thing is, you know what you're going to get from LeBron. LeBron's going to have a good game tonight. The thing is, I'm not saying he's going to get 45, 15, and 5. I don't think he's going to do that again. But
no.
I think he's going to play very, very well. My key is Dwayne Wade. What does he do now? What does he do in this particular ball game? I mean, because we look at LeBron, and like you said, LeBron has been carrying his team for parts of this series and parts of this season. And I think people tend to forget last year, the first three rounds was all about LeBron. LeBron was the best player on the Heat team the first three rounds last season. And once he got to the finals, he disappeared a little, obviously. But the first three rounds, LeBron was the reason that the Heat got to the NBA Finals. But I look at it now, and it's going to be interesting. My key is Dwayne Wade, and if he can step up.
So is Dwayne Wade just not playing that well? Can his ego not handle him being the man anymore? What's going on with Dwayne Wade, Paul? You tell me. When Dwayne Wade started, everybody said before the last game, Dwayne Wade, LeBron needs to get, I heard Magic say, Dwayne Wade needs to get off to a good start the last game. Well, it wasn't Dwayne Wade, it was LeBron James. Dwayne Wade made a few shots late, but Dwayne Wade has been atrocious in the first half of the whole series. And I don't know if it's egos that can handle it, that he, his body, physically, he can do it. But it's not the same Dwayne Wade that we used to see. It ain't the same Dwayne Wade that we saw dominating in the 2006 NBA Finals. I know that. So I don't know what's wrong with this Dwayne Wade.
Well, I look at Dwayne Wade, and it possibly could be health. I mean, I hear reports that he's not right in terms of his knee. That knee is not right. So it could be health with Dwayne Wade. But I don't know. I mean, and many question this, Willie, and I want you to think about this for a second. Many have said, and I've heard many say that, really, LeBron James and Dwayne Wade, their games are very similar. Both of those guys need the ball in their hands to be effective. And is it time to start saying or even thinking about the possibility that maybe these two cannot coexist?
Okay, but against Indiana, they played great in some of those games. When they needed to take over, they played great against Indiana.
They did.
Bosh wasn't at the end, and they coexisted. Well, I mean, obviously, something's going to have to be done with the big three. And to me, you know, and I guess that's where egos get involved. When you start talking about it, Lamar James isn't going anywhere. So, I mean, if any of the big three are going to go, it's going to be Bosh or Wade. LeBron's not going anywhere. He's MVP of the league, so I mean that's where money and egos get into this, and that's why I like Oklahoma City, and I want the Heat to win the championship. But these guys, Oklahoma City is a blue collar town with people that work hard every day, and those kids are hungry and they want to play. They're not making $30-40 million. They got $100 million contract. Well, you know, you got Russell and you got Durant. They got an $80 million deal. But outside of that, they're not making a big endorsement money. They're not making $40-50 million a year. So they're hungry. So it's when it comes down to it. Well, LeBron and Dwayne Wade, these guys have to understand, Michael Jordan didn't make a lot of money on the basketball court. He's making a lot of money off the court. But it was always about the game, and you wanted to put rings on your finger. You can have $150 million or $200 million in the bank, but you got to want to get the rings first. And that's why I don't see the hunger in them like I see in Oklahoma City.
Well, yeah, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about that in a moment. Well, let's bring in now a guy who's played some Game 7s himself, a guy who knows a lot about Game 7 and knows a lot about the game of basketball, former NBA star Derek Anderson. Derek, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How about yourself, Paul?
Doing well. Thanks for joining us.
Not a problem.
Hey, Derek, I saw Derek, what's your ultimate fight in Atlanta?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and this Willie Rolfe, man, and I remember back in the day when they used to have the Memorial Weekend, seeing you over there at the Ritz-Carlton. I was over there with my boys back in Cancun back in, like, the mid to late 90s.
Oh, yeah. I was over with Jay-Z and all those guys.
Yeah, it was Jay-Z, the Rough Rider. Remember, I had my homeboy Quentin. He was working out with y'all over there that time.
That's right.
Yeah. See, Paul, we're going back on you a little bit, Paul.
I see that. You guys reminisce a little bit. Let me stop that for a second. Derek, let's talk about LeBron's performance in Game 6. 45, 15, and 5. Have you ever seen anything like that?
Not from him. And for him to do that, it's what we've all been waiting for. These are the comments that everybody makes. It's like we see more in him than he does sometimes. And for him to do that lets us know that it can be done.
Right. And I mean, it was truly – I mean, I expected a big performance, but I really did not expect that. And one thing I didn't expect also was his facial expressions. It seemed that LeBron, you see LeBron seems to have a smile on his face, seems to be a happy-go-lucky type of guy. But on Thursday night, his facial expression was a whole different LeBron James. Talk about that.
I just think his mindset was different. He realized what it meant. He realized what was on the line. He got tired of – eventually people are going to get tired of getting talked about, and you're going to do something about it. I mean,
right.
When Kobe first got in the league, people was messing with him and beating him up and roughing him up. And after a while, he said, I ain't going to be friends with nobody. I'm just going to go out and destroy my opponent. And I think that's what LeBron finally decided to do, at least that night. And
right.
If he does that, then he can put 40 and 10 up every night if he chose to, regardless if he's hitting a lot of jumpers or not, because he drives so hard. He get his mind right and make these free throws. This man could be unstoppable.
Right, and he truly was unstoppable last night. One of the reasons was that jump shot was working for him, and that jump shot was a big part of what he was doing on Thursday night. And looking at it now, Derek, I mean, he had a big Game 6, but now we moved to Game 7. And now we can forget about what happened in Game 6. Now we're at Game 7. In terms of mental toughness, who do you favor, the Celtics or the Heat?
And the thing about mental toughness is your whole team set. And I think as LeBron goes, they go. But as Boston goes, all four of those guys are mentally tough. So
right.
I think there's two different ones. You look at a veteran team who knows what it needs to get done. But then you look at the rest of the teammates who know LeBron and D-Wade is going to carry them. So long as those two guys are going, I think they'll be fine. Tonight's a mental game. It's not even about people being tired or fatigued. Tonight is whoever stays mentally tough throughout the game. Don't get technicals. Don't not run back on defense. That's who's going to win the game tonight.
But Derek, I have a question for you. When you watch the Heat play and you watch some of the stuff that Spoelstra does as far as the lineups and what he does, like I was telling Paul before you got on the line, I don't understand why Boston playing the second half of Game 5 and you know, not even him scoring, but just his defensive presence, because Kevin Garnett was able to get in the lane and do what he wanted to do. I wonder, are the Heat players, you know, are they hungry? Do they want it? And do you think that Spoelstra does the best job with his lineups, and, you know, or the way he shifts personnel? It doesn't seem like to me like he has a set rotation every night.
He does it, and he's like the coach now is like players. You know how we don't want to feel like we're done when we're about to retire? Like, man, I used to get dunk. He's the same way. He's stuck in his system, and he needs to learn how to get out of that, because there's no way that we can see the things that are obvious to where you're supposed to adjust to certain situations. The last game, and when they had that thing, he's supposed to have four shooters out there with LeBron at the top. I mean, a camp coach would have did that. But I think he was so set in his ways that he just wanted, he believed that his star guys would make a play. And it's not a knock on coach. I just think he had his ways stuck and he didn't think about anything else.
So you're talking about in that last play when LeBron was sitting there and he tried to pass the ball to Haslam, he's supposed to have four shooters sitting in the corner in that game.
I mean, just waiting. Like, everybody knew he was going to get the ball. They knew they was going to pack it in. How are you packing it in with four shooters out there?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just an obvious situation. But like you said, he didn't play Bosch because he was stuck in his rotation. He didn't want to hurt him instead of using what you have.
But when you see, but yeah, and I see Derek. I know you played. I didn't play past the high school level. But when you see what Kevin Garnett's doing down low, and he's running down the middle of the lane, it looked to me like Kevin Garnett, like they weren't even guarding him. And when he's running down the middle of the lane, and then they're throwing the ball in there to him, I just don't understand how you can be so pig-headed and not switch it up when you know that you got a chance to lose this game. It just didn't seem like it was that smart to me. I just don't understand it myself.
Yeah, no one does. I mean, we're all questioning. You look at every commentator to every player. I mean, and that's the thing. If when we played, we had guys on the floor who recognized stuff. If somebody guarded me and was small, we immediately changed the play and went down to the post. These same guys, they don't have that. Like Rajon or Jason Kidd, they don't have that where they would just mix it up and play. We're going to play basketball now. We're not going to worry about an X and O. You get there, and you wait until I get ready. And I think a lot of guys don't do that nowadays. They don't direct their teams. They just try to make a play out of basketball plays and not out of just understanding what you need to do for the possession. So, I mean, Kevin rotating like that, it should have definitely been quick. I mean, yeah, Juwan Howard, I know he's slow, but he's smart enough to understand position. And I think you should even utilize him more.
Right. So you think we should see a little more Juwan Howard, maybe even Joel Anthony as well? Because we haven't seen much of him either lately.
No, I mean, when you got a big dude just destroying LeBron, I mean, getting him in foul troubles. I mean, if that's Juwan or Joel fouling out, nothing against them, but you can lose him. You shouldn't have LeBron guarding this dude getting the fifth foul on Kevin Garnett.
Yeah,
that doesn't make sense. I would have never – and it was more position. If KG's going to shoot, he's going to score over top of another 7-footer, not over the 6'8", dude.
Right. And
yeah, so LeBron should have been in that position to be in that position anyways, what he's saying, Paul.
Exactly, because Kevin Garnett's not guarding him at the other end.
We're talking to former NBA star Derek Anderson as we preview this big Game 7 tonight, Heat. Celtics, a big game for the NBA Finals. And, Derek, you played in Game 7s yourself. You know the mindset. You know what it takes to win a Game 7. Talk about the finality of Game 7.
We played Dallas. Dallas had us down 3-1 when I was in Portland. Me, Bonzi, Rasheed, Scotty, we all made them. We made this comment and said, we'll be back in Dallas. We wound up winning the next two games and brung the 7-game back in Dallas. And the thing about that was they were just so gung-ho and trying to beat us, they pressured themselves. They was trying to do stuff that they wasn't normally used to doing. They tried to score real fast. And what we did, just slow walk them. We just mentally slow walked them. We posted Bonzi up. I spotted up. Rasheed spotted up. You know, we just played basketball. We wasn't worrying about X's and O's. We just played basketball and how to fight against a team who was a little better than us. So tonight at Game 7, these are all mental games, man. Every single 7-game, you look at them, everyone is mental. And you look at from Michael Jordan's last shot when he hit that follow-through shot and everybody remembers it, that's a mental capacity. He shot that ball knowing I'm going to make this shot. So tonight is just a mental game, and whoever's mentally tough enough to not get caught up in the BS about it, that's who will win.
Now, Derek, how tired do you know, you playing in the NBA so long, how fatigued are these guys' body at this time of year? Do they even think about that, or they just get going and you just play through it? But how sore, and you know, on the day when the coach gives them off, you know, your routine would be just to go in, maybe just sit down and ice. What was your routine during the week, and how tired, how fatigued are these guys' body at this point in the season?
You had to literally go rest. Like, we sat in a hot tub, cold tub, watched film, and rested. Even when I was with Miami, we wanted the championship. We rested, man, but the pad was still had us on the bike, so we were making sure our legs wouldn't be the first to go. So yeah. I think the biggest thing with them guys is just rest, but also watch film. Because every time you watch film, you'll see the same situations going to come about in a game. You need to be, like I said, mentally prepared. So we were exhausted, but you would never know when you play, because once you get out there, your adrenaline's going.
Mm-hmm.
After Game 7, we felt like we could have played another 8-9 games. It's just that next day you would have felt it.
Okay, I got you.
And Derek, talk about the advantages that the home team has in a Game 7. History tells us Game 7 at home, you got to favor the home team. Talk about the advantages of the home team.
I just think you're comfortable, man. Like you said, you leave your house at 5 o'clock to get to the game, at 6 o'clock, 5:30 or 6. You don't have to get on a hotel bus. You don't have to worry about a hotel room. Like, we was in Game 6 in we was in Game 5 with the Lakers, and my room service food didn't come. So I'm just like, man, you got to be kidding me. And you know what I mean? Those things that could happen that might bother you. Energy might not be up. Those are things that make a difference, even though people say they don't. Those are things that could bother you in the course of the game. But I just think home court doesn't matter at this point. This game seven, this is all we got. We're going to find a way to win on the road or at home. So it's simple. It's small things that could bother you, but it won't bother you once you get on that court at all.
Yeah, sometimes, like Derek said, his room service didn't come. Some of that stuff maybe not, probably isn't done on accident either.
And it is.
Man, that's even for the game.
Done on purpose.
Yeah.
And tonight, I mean, I was saying before you jumped on, Derek, that LeBron is going to come out, and I think LeBron's going to have a good game. He's not going to have 45, 15, and 5 again, but he's going to have a good game. My key is Dwayne Wade. Last game he had 17 points, 6 from 17 from the field, but he didn't seem right, and he doesn't seem right now. What is your key tonight?
Like I said, mental toughness, man. I mean, if these guys say I'm not making shots, I get to the foul line. If I'm not, I'm going to have – coach has 4 shooters. If I'm penetrating, I'm still a threat when I'm out there. So, again, it's a mental game, man. If the coaches come mentally prepared to put these guys in the right position, the players come mentally prepared, ready to finish the game, not play 1 or 2 quarters, play the full 4 quarters, that's who's going to win. I mean, it's just okay. It's so simple. When you notice the end of the game that you know something wasn't done right mentally or X's and O's, you know what happened. It was fatigue. And until these guys learn in tonight's game, watch what I tell you. When you notice if LeBron does get 40 or Dwayne gets 30, you still need to have those guys in a position at the end of the game to do that. Because you remember how many times LeBron had almost a triple-double and lost, and what we remember, he missed 2 free throws. He didn't shoot the ball. So it doesn't matter him having a great game. It's when his time counts and you're mentally ready that you make those right decisions is what's going to make the difference in that.
Well, what about, Dick, what about the fact that Dwayne Wade has got off to so many slow starts, and even I heard Magic saying he needed to get Dwayne Wade involved in the last game, but LeBron just took it all on his shoulders. You know, if Dwayne Wade gets out there and he goes, you know, 2 for 8 or 2 for 9 or whatever he has been going in the first half, you know, so what can he do to adjust to that, or is there something wrong with him physically where he's not able to produce early in the game?
They need to watch what OKC did. When you get Westbrook and Harden and Durant all averaging 20, you got 2 guys to do the exact same thing. Your turn, pick and roll, pop and shot. All those things that you do needs to be mentally prepared. I'm telling you, look at X's and O's. It's nothing different from what you're watching in the game. Because if he's not healthy, put him in a position where he's on the box. I don't need him dribbling 30 feet out. Get him on that 15-foot. He hit the shot. He draws fouls. He up and unders people. He got too much with his game not to be effective.
So more inside game, more inside penetration stuff than being outside shooting jumpers.
Yeah, because if his legs hurt, why is it going to hurt to shoot from 30 as opposed to 15? And look, I mean, LeBron did it in the post. So we are watching the same games. If LeBron scored 10 in the post, put him back in the post. If D-Wade got 3 layups, get him into the hole at a shorter pace. We keep trying to do stuff that they used to do, but do what works, man. This is a different team. This is a smart Boston team, and that's the problem. Everybody keeps looking down on Boston because they got tired the other night. Man, this is a smart team.
That's very smart.
And right. That's the thing. If they come and they got some energy and they making shots, it could be a long night.
Especially Paul Pierce. He went 4 for 18. I don't expect him to go 4 for 18 tonight.
I don't know what he's going to go, but I tell you what, he's got the smartest point guard I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, that's incredible. They were talking about trading Rajon Rondo, and he's the one who carries that team. And I don't think that Boston team is going to be the same next year. I think they're going to break that up a little bit. But Rajon Rondo, you know, has been very special in this playoffs.
The best point guard in the game, Derek Rondo?
I think we're looking at it different. Like we compare Magic Johnson and Michael Jordan, 2 different players, 2 different outcomes, but 2 great players. Like if I wanted a certain player to do something, I would. Like you can say Chris Paul, Darren Williams, and Westbrook, they're scoring guards that can get everybody involved. Rajon's just starting to score, but as far as doing what he does best for his team, Rajon definitely does the most for his team. I mean, you take another point guard on there who directs and tells a guy to back door, throws him a bounce pass to get him an and-one. How many other point guards does that?
Mm-hmm.
Right, definitely.
And he rebounds and pushes the ball. He's effective at rebounding. He can do it all for you. But you know, he does a little bit of everything for a point guard.
But he's smart. That's what I'm saying. He's smart. Like if I know I can't do this, I know I need to do this. Because if I can't shoot, I'm gonna make sure I'm gonna put the pressure on you the whole night.
Definitely,
and that's the difference. Yeah.
And Derek, you talked about OKC, and OKC got by the Spurs. And I had you on a few weeks back, and one thing you talked about with the Spurs is they make you adjust to them. It seemed like in Game 5 when Popovich made the switch from and put Ginobili in the starting lineup, that the Spurs started to adjust to what OKC was doing. Did the Spurs panic in some respect by bringing Ginobili into the starting lineup?
I don't know if it was so much panic, but I know that wasn't what he normally should do.
Right.
He usually does stuff different, but I think the problem he had was he did it when they were up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you don't show your hand when you up. You make them, you know, feel like something's going on. But honestly, man, they just lost to a better team. I mean, they're younger, they're athletic, they just lost to a better team. So in that situation, whether he started Ginobili or not, it just showed that they wasn't ready to beat that team, man. That team just was too young, too strong.
Well, instead of starting Ginobili, would you have brought somebody else and started them instead of and put Green on the bench, or would you have went with, even though Green wasn't playing that well in that series?
I'd have kept it the same. I mean, I would, that's what I would have did. I'd have kept it the same, tried to get his confidence. I don't want to lose my player's confidence. So as a player, if your coach puts you on the bench, he's like, damn, he gave up on me. So
yeah.
I try to keep my player's confidence. If he would have done wrong or wouldn't have been going well in the beginning, it wasn't like they were down 20 except one game, like in the beginning. So I would have took him out, and you got Steven Jackson too. I mean, it's just too many reasons. But, you know, Pop's a good coach, so I really can't. I wouldn't question him anytime, but I wouldn't have did that because I don't want to lose my player's confidence.
Yeah,
right.
Steven Jackson played real good in that series. Another thing, too, that they say about that, too, Paul, and Derek, is that when you run that type of offense, when you come down there and you stand in the corner waiting on the ball, you know, Danny Green wasn't used to putting the ball on the floor and penetrating and making shots because he's just used to so much of going to a spot and not just working on his one-on-one game.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
And Derek, looking at it now, Charles Barkley called for Tim Duncan to retire. You played with Tim Duncan. How much game does he have left in your mind?
He can play until his body tells him because, you know, we play because the strong guys can play mentally. Like my last year I played, I was really exhausted. My back was hurt. You know, I had two knee surgeries, so I was more tired than anything. It wasn't, but my mental game was still there. I still knew how to play position and everything. So same thing with Tim. He knows how to play basketball. He doesn't have to retire yet. He might need to go and deal like KG did, get with a team. He's not so much the focal point. Like if he was to go to Boston and share time with KG, both of them on both boxes, that would be a different look. I think that would be a good look, but we all know that Tim's not leaving San Antonio, so he can retire when he's ready.
And that was my next question, and he's not leaving San Antonio, obviously.
No,
he's
you think,
stay there
you think they'll probably cut his minutes down some.
Definitely.
But you're not going to be effective. Who are you going to bring his minutes down to? Like, who are you going to put in there for that?
Yeah, I got you.
You got to win, so you got to win.
Yeah.
And looking at it now, I mean – the Spurs, obviously, the best record in the league the past two seasons. What do you do now if you're San Antonio? Do you think that team is done, or do you think that team can retool and get back to where they were this season?
The thing about it is they're going against OKC. I mean, anytime you look at it, like no matter what, how many teams rebuilt against Chicago, you still had to play them dudes. I mean, no matter what you did as a team, until you find that collective group like Orlando did when he first came out. Came back out of retirement. That's what you need.
Right.
You need to have a core group of guys that have played together for maybe 1 or 2 years to get developed. And I keep telling these GMs that they stop being emotional and trading a guy because he had one bad season, half a season, and then next year you get somebody, then it takes you 2 years to develop him, and then you trade him because he's not what you want. You need to get a group of guys, keep them together for 2 or 3 years, build your chemistry, and make a run.
Right.
These GMs are too emotional and they just start making, like you said, trading Rajon. Who would you trade him for? Like, and what would you get back out? Like,
you're not gonna get nothing back out of it. And he makes a great point. Look at Oklahoma. Look what Oklahoma City's doing by keeping that core group of guys together. And then I look at a team like the Denver Nuggets, who got a bunch of young talent. If they keep those guys together and they let those guys develop, you know, the nucleus they got now, they're gonna be tough to deal with too in a few years.
Yeah, exactly. But watch and see what they do. If they don't get what they like next year, they'll trade half the team, then they have to start over again and expect people to win in 1 or 2 seasons. That don't happen. You build a team. You build a franchise. You don't buy one.
And Derek, you got some things going on off the court. Victory H2O. Tell us about that.
It's a water that we developed. Me and a couple of my buddies, man, we got something going. And it's called the. It's got electrolytes with oxygenized alkaline in it. And basically, we're going to bring it out in June 23rd in Kentucky. I just wanted to have something going, man. And it's awesome water, man. You got to try it. I'm gonna send it to you.
And where can we find out about this the water and the website?
VictoryH2OKY.com.
Okay.
VictoryH2OKY.com. But it's good. I'm bringing all my championship guys back to Lexington. My 96, 78, 98, and this year's team's coming back to Rupp. We're going to have a big launch of the water, taste testing, and having pitchers. We always see guys who make it in successful basketball, but we don't get to see them after that. So I got Antoine Walker coming. I got the whole 96 team coming and 98. So it's going to be fun.
Definitely. It sounds like a great, great time. And you talked about having some members of this last year's Kentucky championship winning team. Anthony Davis. More than likely, he's going to go to the Hornets. Hornets have the number one pick. Is that a better spot for him than the Bobcats? And that might be an obvious answer, but
I just think the only reason it's better is because they have a solidified coach. That coach Williams, he's going to be there. He's not going nowhere. Everything about him is set in stone. So I think they're solid as far as that. I think MJ could have helped that young kid out though, because he knows how to make a player better if he's going to work with them. But I just think they're not being set with their coaching staff yet. And knowing they just came off a bad season, I think it's best that he goes to a team like that who's solid. Those guys played hard, man, New Orleans. I mean, them dudes played hard. And that's what you need Anthony Davis to be around, guys who are going to play as hard as – he's going to have to play as hard as these guys who have already been proven in the league. So I think I think it's a great fit for him.
And how good can he be? How good will he be, you think?
He's one of those questions, man, because the guy's so young. He's only 19, literally.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, God forbid he ever gets hurt, but he's just different. But granted, we don't have any big superstar centers like that either. So I just think he's smart enough to understand position. He knows how to play basketball. He's got a lot of room to grow. I think he could be one of the – I don't see anybody being better than him probably in the next 8 to 10 years, though.
As far as on the defensive end, what about offensively? What do you think he's going to be able to give you offensively in the NBA?
Well, he's good. He can use either hand. We just didn't pay attention because he wasn't needed as much in college. That's the thing. You remember how, you know, you go to college, you see one guy average 12, he gets to the league, and, I mean, Vince Carter averaged 13 points at NC. He wound up averaging 27 for like 5-6 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you just have to go to the right position because he can score down low. But then his teammates, they play pick and pop. I mean, he winds up making a jump shot. He's good.
Yeah, he can shoot the jumper too. Now another kid that might have a whole bunch of upside too is that kid Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. Now, I don't know. What do you think about him? Because I really think that kid has the potential to be a star player too in the league.
And he's, again, I think he's more of that Vince Carter where you'd be like, he only averaged, you know, 12 or 14 in college.
Mm-hmm.
He gets to the pros and averages 25.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, man, I didn't know he did all that. It's because his college is different, so. He's got his passion for playing basketball is relentless. And I compared him to Kobe this year when I saw him. I said, man, this dude don't care who you are. He's going at you. He don't stop. He's in the paint with 7-footers and moving dudes like 6'8", 250. He's moving them. I'm like, that takes heart. That ain't nothing to do with a coach. That's all the passion and heart. I want this ball and I want to win. So he's got a passion like Kobe, man, that is unmatched with anybody I've seen. So his potential is all on him. If he makes it to be an all-star, I won't be surprised at all.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking to former NBA star Derek Anderson as we preview the upcoming game tonight, Heat Celtics Game 7. And Derek, now, if the Heat lose tonight, do you break up the big three if you're Pat Riley?
I don't break them up. I bring in a new nucleus for my bench players, my second and third guys. You keep your Giannis, but then you go grab some other guys, a free agency, maybe a few trades. You know, you go grab somebody who's going to be effective for you on the bench. Because that three needs to stay together. You're not going to go get nobody. If you break them up, who are you going to go get to replace any of them? You know what I mean?
What about the luxury taxes? They're talking about they might have to break them up because the luxury tax is kicking in this year.
Well, if you win a championship, that'll make up for it.
You just have to
go find other guys. Or if not, just utilize your guys more. Because James, Jones, he's great. I mean, he can do a lot more than spot up shoot. He's just not in that position. He's like you said, like the Green kid, just spot up shooting.
Mm-hmm.
That dude can play, man. He needs to get more time. He needs to get involved in offense. All of that stuff, have him coming off screens and everything, you get a player to work. So I just think they need to utilize their bench more, man, and make it work that way.
And, Derek, tonight, obviously, big game seven. Who do you have? Who wins tonight and who advances to the NBA Finals, Celtics or Heat?
Oh, man, that's a good one. Like I said, it's the only way you're going to be able to tell, because nobody can tell you right now. Everybody right now is guessing. You just had Boston beat them in Miami, then you had opposite Miami beat them in Boston. Nobody knows. The only fact is you have to watch and see who's mentally tough tonight. If you see guys start to wild out and get technicals and start arguing with each other, you'll start to see who's going to win at that point.
Okay, Derek, I got a question for you. Will either one of them be able to beat Oklahoma City?
Oh, I think Miami has a better chance.
Okay.
Yeah, I think Boston just doesn't run up and down enough with Oklahoma City.
Do you think Miami had enough to run up and down with them for four quarters, though?
Yeah, with those two freight trains, with Dwayne and LeBron, absolutely.
Okay.
I think, because the thing about it is, you can't just put pressure on me at one end. If I put it on you at the other end, too, now we got a game. I don't think Paul and Ray Allen would be up to five, four straight games of running like that continuously.
Do you think Miami have enough to slow those gate kids down, though? Will they be able to slow all the weapons that they have on Oklahoma City? Do you think Miami can slow them down? Bosh would be a key player in that series too. Bosh would have to get his numbers back up. You know, if they're going to compete against Oklahoma City, Bosh would have to get the numbers up to where they were before.
Yeah, that's the key. You said it. He's the difference, because Knowles and Chalmers, they can run with Westbrook. They can keep him, you know, bothered for the whole game. And, you know, the other ones match up as well. But you said it. That's the key. If Bosh can make these guys go up and down and play defense and get them pressure on the other end, I think that's the better game. But don't ever count Boston out. I'm telling you, these dudes are smart, man. I ain't never seen a smarter team than that. I mean, granted, they lost the other day, but that team is super smart, man.
And so, Derek, you're not going to give us a prediction for tonight? You're not going to give us a definitive answer, the Heat or the Celtics?
Man, I couldn't call it, man. I really couldn't. I couldn't call it. If I totally had to choose, I'd say 51-49 Miami Heat.
Okay, fair enough. So that means you chose the Heat. And Derek, real quickly again, tell us where we can find out about your water and all the great things you have going on.
Okay, well, if you look up victoryh2oky.com, you'll see that. And I also got a couple movie scripts that I'm in rotation. I'm a screenwriter, and got an exercise bike that's coming out too. So I got quite a few things on tap, man, ready to get it going, and it's going to be a great year.
Definitely. You got a lot of great things going, and we appreciate you stopping by here, man, and we wish you nothing but the best of luck with your water, your movie scripts, and all the exercise bike and all the other great things you got going on, man. It was a pleasure.
Likewise, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Take care.
Let's talk to you, Derek.
Bye, guys. Take care.
Derek Anderson, former NBA star. He can't call it 51-49. Miami.
Good guy, real good guy.
Yeah,
real
definitely sounds guy. Like a good guy. Got a lot of great things going on outside of, well, he's obviously retired, but a lot of great things going on. Seemed like he protected himself after the game of basketball in terms of his investments and some of the great things he has going on. But he says 51-49 in terms of percentage. If he had to choose, he would choose Miami. It seems like you're kind of leaning towards Miami yourself, but you got some questions.
I'm gonna say 60-40 Miami. I just don't feel like Miami plays the way they need to play all the time. That's why I get disappointed, because you see how much talent they do have. But I'm gonna say Miami at home. I understand he's saying it's gonna be mental, and it will be mental. But I see Boston is a team that I will see that will be getting upset if they don't get some calls going their way and can get some get teed up. So I understand they're the smarter team. They have the experience. But fatigue will play a factor at some point in this game. And I just think Miami will have too much for them. And I'll tell you, I'm going 60-40 that Miami gets it done tonight.
Well, I'm going to go 100% to zero, and I think Miami is going to get it done tonight.
We can't just count them out, though, Paul.
I just think, really, they're just – and I think Game 6 showed me a lot in terms of – and Game 6 really, truly was about LeBron James and that performance.
It's going to be more than LeBron James in Game 7.
It does, but he refused to lose in that particular ball game in 45, 15, and 5, and the only other player who was in double figures was Dwayne Wade with 17 points. So, I mean, he pretty much put the Miami Heat on his back. And I think he's going to try to do the same in Game 7, but it should be interesting to see
how Boston adjusts.
What kind of defense they're going to run at him.
But I think Bosh and Wade have to play a bigger role. And I think it's going to start with Bosh. If Bosh can give you 15, 18 points and give you, you know, about 10 boards, I think that he win the game. So I think you're going to see a bigger role by Bosh because he's three games, he's back now. And I think he's got to go have his legs up underneath him better than he had in the previous two games.
And that was my next question. Do you think he has 15 or 20 points in him?
I think he has that in him.
Okay. And then we'll see about that tonight. And we'll see if Spoelstra brings him off the bench again. I think he should do that. I think he should continue to keep him on the bench and have him come off the bench. And I think he should continue with that. You think he continues with that tonight?
That's a real good question. Does he start him tonight?
Right.
Well, he started. I mean, he could keep him off the bench. He's three games in. He could start him tonight.
Right. We'll see. I mean,
we'll see.
I think he would be better suited to bring him off the bench. So energy.
If he starts him and gets off to a good start, I mean, it's gonna be problem when he plays more. It's gonna get KG problems because KG's got to try to match up with him on the defensive end, and we already know this. When KG goes to the bench. And he's going to have to go sit down for a little while. It's a different Boston team without him in the middle.
Definitely. And you talked about with Derek Anderson, if Miami were to get to the NBA Finals against OKC, could Miami handle the running up and down the court transition with OKC? I think they can because if you look at Miami, that team is better suited, and that team is at its best when they are running. When they're running, that team is at their best. The only thing is, in terms of if it was going to be a Miami-OKC series, NBA Finals, the thing I have is the half court because OKC has shown me against the Spurs that they can execute in the half court. Kevin Durant, whether it's coming off screens or whether it's off the dribble, Westbrook doing his thing as well, and even Ibaka, who's giving them some offense as well, and, of course, James Harden off the bench who's been doing his thing throughout the course of these playoffs. But I do think in terms of transition, I think Miami is a better team when they play in transition, but I think OKC would be the better team in half court.
OKC is a jump-shooting team, though. Remember, they are a jump-shooting team.
Right. They are, but they shoot the jump shot very well.
They do shoot it very well, but I'm saying they are a jump-shooting team, so at the end of the day, a team that's going to be able to post up and get down low, if they're not shooting very well, in certain spurts, will have an advantage on them if they're going to stand out there and shoot jump shots. And let's not forget about James Harden. That's the problem with OKC. They got so many guys. You got Ibaka that went 11 for 11. Perkins sometimes can give you some points. But you got Westbrook. You got Durant. You got Seth Alosha who can shoot the ball. Derek Fisher who can make a big shot. And James Harden has made some big shots in the playoffs.
He's definitely made some big shots. You go back to Game 5 where he hit that big three. That big three against the Spurs, that pretty much put that ball game away. He's hit a lot of big shots in OKC, and it's funny with these playoffs. I mean, you look at it, first two games of the Spurs, OKC series, we're saying, oh, Popovich is out coaching Scotty Brooks. Scotty Brooks may be in over his head in these first two games. And then he comes back in game 3 and 4, makes the adjustment, puts Seth Alosha on Tony Parker. And pretty much his adjustments forced the Spurs to come out of what they do and what they have been doing throughout the course of the season, and that is bringing Ginobili off the bench.
Well, everybody was wondering why Seth Alosha wasn't playing the first two games.
Right.
I mean, Seth Alosha is a real good basketball player. So, they got a lot of talent in OKC. The thing that's going to happen with OKC in the future is how many of those guys they're going to be able to keep together. Because once you start winning, somebody's going to come after some of those guys.
Definitely. I mean, you look at it, Ibaka, the upside for that guy, I mean, that 11-for-11 ball game that he had in game four, I mean, the upside for him, I mean, the way he blocks shots, his athleticism, I mean, goodness gracious. And then, of course, you have Westbrook and Durant, and then you have Harden. I mean, there is so much talent on that ball.
Except for Loshia, they got some talent, man.
They got a lot of talent on that team. And you look at it now, you go through the Lakers, you go through Dallas, you go through San Antonio. Will OKC, I mean, the question becomes now is, will OKC be the representative in the finals for the next 2 to 3 years out of the Western Conference?
I say not every year, but I say longer than that. I say they're going to be, I'm not going to say 2 or 3 years in a row, but I'm going to say that they're going to be somewhere around those Western Conference finals for the next 5, 6, 7 years. I'm going to go further in 2 or 3 years.
But you look at the teams I mentioned. Dallas is getting a little older. Lakers, Kobe's getting a little older. And the Spurs, obviously, a team that's a little older as well. Those are older teams now. But I say this, and I look at Dallas.
I say Denver's going to be an up-and-coming team. Denver's going to be, if Denver keeps going,
I don't know about Denver because
you
don't have that superstar. You don't have that star player. Now, Gallinari, he could be that guy moving forward. But I got my questions about Denver.
Yeah, but, I mean, they still can pick up that star player. But they still, McGee played great. You got the young guy they drafted, the young defensive presence guy they drafted from Morehouse State. You have
Kenneth Faried.
You got some good pieces there. You got some pieces there that if you keep, you got Ty Lawson who's becoming a very, very, very good point guard too. You got to start putting him up in that category, and he had some huge playoff games against the Lakers too. So you got some real good. You got a good nucleus there to build upon.
You do, but I mean. Look at Dallas. I think Dallas is going to be an intriguing team because they have some cap space. And Darren Williams, we know he's from that area. So, I mean, if you get a Darren Williams, you put a Darren Williams in Dallas, and that changes some things as well.
Yeah, but Dallas, outside of Darren Williams, I mean, a lot of those guys on that team, Marion, Jason Terry, Nowitzki, you got some age on that team, though. So outside of that, you do have some age on that team.
You do, but I think that would help that situation because you're bringing in a guy who you could argue is the best point guard in the game. You could argue that Darren, I'm not saying he is, but you can make a very good argument that he is.
Well, he's going to be more consistent too. He's had some injuries. He's been injured some too lately too. Now he's got to be more consistent. I would say, yeah, he is, but he's not as consistent as the other guards. I'm not going to put Darren Williams up there with Chris Paul or with Rondo or those guys because I don't think he's as consistent on a night-in, night-out basis as those guys.
But let's talk about Rondo for a second. I mean, Rondo had the benefit and has the benefit of playing with three Hall of Famers, Pierce, Garnett, and Ray Allen. And so in some respect, some attention is going to be drawn to those particular guys. I mean,
sometimes those guys aren't scoring, Paul. Rondo never doing the show sometimes.
If we put Rondo on another team, is Rondo the Rondo that we all know and love?
I think in that system, he is that good a player. Because Rondo creates it on his own. Rondo is so special because Rondo can rebound the ball, push the ball. He can score. Or, you know, he controls the whole tempo of the game. He throws the alley-oop. I mean, he gets everybody involved. I mean, and even when Bass is out there, Rondo gets Bass involved. So I think Rondo's a special player regardless. I understand the big three hustle, but I still say Rondo's an exceptional player on another team. And Rondo brings it every night. Rondo comes out there and plays hard every night.
He is but there was talk in terms of him and Doc Rivers clashing and the talk that he was somewhat of a mental case. You wonder if he goes to a different situation and maybe that team is not as good as this Boston team has been for many years. What would happen then? Does he turn into that big time prima donna, that guy that, you know, that almost Andrew Bynum like in some respects?
Well,
I mean, could he turn into that type of guy?
No, I'm not. You can't compare Rondo to Andrew Bynum. You know, I think he's a more consistent player, and I don't think at this stage Rondo's not going to get traded to a team that's not going to have good pieces around him. I mean, if somebody's going to want Rondo, it's going to have to be a team that's trying to make a run, because he's one of those guys that's going to get traded to probably an elite team. I mean, I don't see him getting traded, you know, to a team in scrap metal. You're going to have to trade him to a team for some real good players. If you're going to give him up, you're giving him up for some elite players.
Definitely. I mean, you're right. You're right. I mean, you know, in terms of Rondo, you're not giving him away, like you said, for nothing. You're going to get a lot back for him. So, but I'm just interested to see what would happen if he didn't have the benefit of the big three. I would wonder what kind of player he would be.
Well, we might find out. We might find out some of that next year. Big three is there next year.
Yeah, I don't think they are as well. I think they are going to be broken up next year. But I mean, we'll see if they come up big tonight. Who knows? Maybe they bring it back for one more year if they come up big for tonight. So we'll see. And Willie, I want to switch gears now for a second here. Big NFL concussion lawsuit. Thousands of players on this lawsuit against the NFL, pretty much linking some of the concussions to permanent head trauma, permanent brain issues. And a lot of players on this lawsuit, guys like Kevin Turner, who's suffering from ALS, and a few others on this lawsuit, well, a few thousand others on this lawsuit. You look at it now, and I say in some respect, and looking at this whole situation, and it's almost like, you know, if you play football, you kind of know the inherent risk of playing football. And granted, maybe the league did know more about head trauma and so on and so forth, but it seems like we're finding a lot more about head trauma now than we did then. In terms of this lawsuit, Willie, I mean, your thoughts, your initial thoughts on this lawsuit.
You know, for a lot of guys that are struggling and having some problems with it, you know, my condolences go out to them, and you know, with their everyday life and trying to do stuff and function, and I know it's difficult for some guys. But on the other hand, I don't think all those guys that on those lawsuits, some of those guys didn't even play that long or won't practice squad and stuff. I don't think all those guys in those lawsuits are having all these head issues. I just think a lot of the guys are probably trying to, you know, cash that check in when it comes to the point if they think they're gonna, you know, settle with something. So it's a lot of guys that are hurting and having some problems, and I think it's a lot of guys on some of those lawsuits that are looking to cash the check in, and that's where, you know, what can the NFL do? Because it's, you know, you want to make sure that the stuff is legitimate, and these guys are just trying to, you know, take advantage of the situation, or, you know, financially not, you know, just trying to get some money from the league.
Right, and I mean, it's a lot of guys on the list. I believe it's almost 2,138 players on the list, over 2,000 on the list of players who pretty much feel like, you know, the league did not do enough to protect them. Again, you know, but I look at it this way, Willie. In terms of this, I think if we polled all those players and asked them if they knew the dangers, of playing with concussions or just the dangers of this whole situation, would they have done it again? I think probably 9 out of 10 would say they would have done it again.
I agree with that.
It's like, okay, I'm not saying the league did do enough to protect them, but what I am also saying is these guys, you know the risk of playing football. You know the possibilities that, you know, when you're done football, you may not be able to walk the same. You may not be able to talk the same. You may not be able to do the same things that you used to do. You know those risks going into it, I believe.
You do know those risks going into it, but you know, and like I said, if guys are beat up and they're jacked up and they put their time in the league and they really are hurting, then the league needs to do something to help these guys out, because if they can't go out and a lot of guys, you know, weren't making the big, huge money, and they can't go out and work a regular 9-to-5 job and can't work, then obviously they can go get a line of duty or terminate, totally permanent. There's stuff you can do to apply, and there are ways you can get compensated, you know, helped out if you're really hurting like that, you know. And so, you know, it's just a fact of who can prove that they really are hurting like that, and how many people aren't in it or just in it for the money. So, like I said,
right.
The guys are really hurting, then they deserve to be helped out because they can't function on their own. So
right.
You can't function on your own, you're obviously going to need some help. So I'm not going to sit there and say that, like you said, well, it doesn't matter because they knew the risk, but if the risk takes you to a point where you can't take care of yourself and you're having problems getting around or you can't remember where you're driving every day and stuff like that, then
right.
Obviously you need some help.
And then maybe, I mean, if you need help, you need help. And let's be clear about that. If you need the help, you need the help. And I think to your point earlier, you don't want to see guys who are just jumping on this lawsuit. You don't want to see guys just jumping on this lawsuit just to jump on this lawsuit and just to get a possible payday. That's what you don't want to see. And to your point, if you put the necessary years in the league and you did work in the league, not necessarily work in terms of performance, but if you played X amount of years in this league, you should be taken care of. But like you said, I don't want to see guys just jumping on this lawsuit just to jump on this lawsuit to get a payday.
Exactly.
And you don't want to see that at all. But, I mean, and 2,138 names, you wonder, and I don't want to question the legitimacy of it, but you wonder how many of those 2,138 are legitimate. That'll be interesting.
And what happens when it gets big like that, you know, what happens with the case? I mean, how long is it tied up in court? You know, what do they get out of this deal? You know, the NFL's got a lot of money. So, I mean,
right.
You know, how long do they keep all this tied up in court? And what really can they do? So, I mean, the bad thing about it is just, you know, you don't ever want to see something like this against the league. And, you know, it's bad publicity, period. So, you know, you would like to get something settled and figure something out. But when you got that many people, I mean, what are you really going to be able to do there? So, it's just a real tough situation. And, like I said, you know, you got some. But the problem is you really have some people that are struggling, and you really have some bad stories with some guys that are really messed up. And I know that the league hopefully will want to be able to address those people and help them. And that's where it gets tough.
And here's some of the names on the list. Tim Couch is on the list, Fred Taylor, Orlandis Gary, Raheem Abdullah, Deion Anderson, Tim Anderson, Carlton Bailey. I mean, I can name a whole bunch of people on this list, but sample some of the names on the list. You got Ken Dilger, tight end for the Colts for many years. You got Eric Everett, remember him for the Eagles some time ago. A few names on the list. Obviously, it's 2,000 names, so a whole bunch of names that could be read here. But, I mean, it should be interesting to see how this thing plays out. And again, if these guys were if anything was done wrong to these guys, you hope that these guys will get their just due. But it should be interesting to see how that plays out. And if it plays out in favor of the players, Willie, does it change and does that how much does that hurt the NFL? How much would that hurt the NFL?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it would hurt the NFL, but you know, hopefully they can come out to some type of agreement, a happy medium. And like I said, the main thing now moving forward is making sure that you do the proper things to be able to protect the guys when they do have concussions or things that happen. But, I mean, certain players, a player that's just going from team to team or is trying to keep a job and not a star player, he's still not going to tell you every time he gets a concussion. He's not going to let you know about it because he doesn't want to mess up his livelihood.
Exactly.
You know, the last thing a player wants to do is get out there and want to, you know, take a chance to losing his job, you know, when he thinks he can play through something. I mean, guys are still going to do that. So, you know, it's still going to be, you know, sometimes they're going to be able to, you know, catch these situations. Sometimes they're not, you know, you know, I just hope they can come to some type of agreement and get it settled. But like I said, it's a tough situation when you got 2,000 guys on the list. You know,
right.
You know that a portion of those guys, especially a guy that maybe only got to the league and was on the practice squad for a couple of years and played, you know, wasn't even on active squad a lot. You know, did some of those aren't legitimate.
And Willie, I know you got to get going, but looking at it now, and I talked about this a few weeks back. I talked about this for a while now, but 5 years ago, and looking at the Saints bounty scandal, if the Saints bounty scandal happened 5 years ago, would we be talking about it the way we're talking about it today?
No.
Right.
No.
I agree with you.
If it happened. If you want to say it happened in the 90s when I came in the league, it wouldn't even be a big deal.
Right. And I think because of the knowledge and the information that we've been finding out about concussions, it kind of changes things. And therefore, I mean, you look at it, whether you agree with Goodell with the suspension or not, I think it's something he almost had to do. With these lawsuits and everything coming down hard on the league, I think it's something he almost had to do. He had to make the example of somebody.
And he did just get it got upheld that he could suspend players
right.
if he wanted right. to. So I think that's basically says that Vilma and those guys are out for the year.
Yeah, they're done. They're done. Goodell, if Goodell has control of whether or not the appeal. If Goodell's going to hear the appeal, there's really no shot for those guys to overturn the suspension. And you look at it, it's unfortunate in terms of in any situation where you have one guy being the judge, the jury, and the executioner. And it's tough. I mean, obviously the players had to – well, not obviously, but a lot of players you hear say they had to give up some things. And they had to – they almost had to give that to the league because the league was – whole league really wanted that. They really wanted Goodell to have that power, and he has the power, and it just doesn't really seem right, but it is what it is.
It is what it is. And
It is what it is.
You know, that's the way it is. You want to play, you got to go by the rules. And, you know, just like this kid Blackman who's gotten himself in a situation with these DWIs right now. You know, he's one of those guys that if Goodell says he wants to put him on the program for his whole career, he's going to be on the program his whole career.
Correct.
So, I mean, it's just you put yourself in that situation, and you got to be, you know, if you all get suspended, you got to accept it. If you want to play in the league, you just have to do what they say do.
Definitely, definitely. And Willie, I know you got to get going, sir. It was a pleasure hanging out with you, man. And you know, let's do this again as always.
All right, be looking for. We got a good night tonight of sports. We got the the LA Kings that might be closing it out. We got the basketball game, and then Pacquiao said he's not going to start his fight until after the Celtics game because he's a big Celtics fan. So you got, you know, three big sporting events happening tonight.
And who wins that fight tonight, Willie?
Whew. You put me on the spot there. I love Pacquiao, but this kid Bradley's tough, and he's going to fight him. I got more confidence in the Heat winning the game tonight than I do in Pacquiao finishing this kid off.
Well, really?
Yeah.
Really?
That's how much confidence I got in Tim Bradley.
And the thing is with Pacquiao, it seems to be a lot of distractions going on with him now. You have the situation with his wife.
But no, he's gotten that together now. He's worked that out. I mean, he's more
they're
focused.
Together,
than,
but they're
spinning it that he's more focused than he's ever been. But like you said, I mean, this Tim Bradley, if you saw him in the weigh-in, this guy's ripped, man. This guy is a fighter. He's tough. He's hungry. He's a hell of a fighter. He's 18 KOs. Like I said, you want to tell him Pacquiao's got some experience on him. And Pacquiao's got a lot of faith, but like I said, I got more confidence in Heat winning than I do Pacquiao beating this kid.
We'll see tonight. That's going to be a good fight. And like you said, a great, great sports night, great sports weekend.
LA Kings. What about the LA Kings? The AC coming out of nowhere, you know, the AC and pretty much putting away everybody throughout the playoffs and having a chance to finish it off tonight.
Definitely. I mean, you give the Kings a lot of credit, the eighth seed and coming out of nowhere, basically. But that's a common thing in hockey. I mean, you see sometimes teams, they ride a hot goaltender and they get hot at the right time. And it seems to be, actually, in some respect, you look at it, it seems to be kind of a common theme in sports now. NFL, you have the same deal where teams will get hot and just ride that wave all the way through. And you have it hockey, you have that all the time. In baseball, you kind of have that all the time. But in terms of basketball, you're not going to see an eighth seed win the NBA title. It's not going to happen.
That would be the toughest one. You see an eighth seed winning in football. You see
no, I'm not the eighth seed, but I would just make an example in terms of the sixth seed being Green Bay, who came out of
Green Bay,
a couple years ago.
Or the Denver Broncos, were they a sixth seed? Or the Pittsburgh Steelers?
The Pittsburgh Steelers also believe were a sixth seed as well.
Yeah, back year in 2005.
And then last year, I think the Giants were a 4 or 5 seed. They might have been the 4th seed, and they came out of nowhere as well. So those lower seeded teams, I don't think you're in the NBA. You'll see an eighth seed ever win the NBA title, unless you have a lockout shortened season like you had this year, and then you have that possibility. But I don't think we'll ever see it.
Okay.
Willie, a pleasure.
Been a pleasure. You take it easy.
All right. Willie Rolfe, hanging out with us for that first hour, talking to Derek Anderson as well. Good conversation with those guys, good talking to those guys, good having those guys on. In the second hour, we're going to be joined by Carolina Panthers linebacker Thomas Davis. Should be interesting to see where he stands in terms of his comeback to the league. Third ACL surgery on his right knee. I'm interested to see what this guy, if he can make that comeback. I believe he can. And he has a lot of confidence in his ability to do so and to make that comeback. So it should be very, very interesting to see if he can make that comeback, and very interesting to get his thoughts on his possible he's back. I mean, he's out there practicing with his team, the Carolina Panthers. So he's going to do it. He thinks he can do it, and he'll be the first player to do it, the first player to come back from 3 ACL surgeries on the same knee, 3 ACL injuries on the same knee, and he thinks he can do it. He says he can do it, and we'll see if he actually can do it, and only time will tell. But, I mean, like Willie Rolfe said, this is a great sports weekend, a great weekend to be alive. If you're a fan of sports and you're a big sports fan, interesting thing came out of horse racing, and there was supposed to be a lot of intrigue behind that one as well. I'll have another. He was going for the Triple Crown at the Belmont, and again, he was injured, got injured on Friday and was forced to retire. He was retired, and unfortunately, he will not be going for the Triple Crown this weekend. And because of that, and interesting thing is, he's not going for the Triple Crown. And also, that sound that you just heard was the remote controls clicking away from the Belmont because of this. And then that adds the intrigue when you have a possibility for a Triple Crown. That adds intrigue to horse racing and the Belmont Stakes. Now that he's gone, meaning I'll have another, now that he's retired and gone, the reality is the sounds that you just heard are those TV sets and those remote controls going off of the Triple Crown and going elsewhere, because that was a part of the big intrigue about the Belmont Stakes today. And he's gone. I'll have another. It is. He's gone. He's gone, and he is retired off away. And I remember many years ago being a Philadelphia guy and Smarty Jones and his quest for the Triple Crown and how exciting that was, the intrigue surrounding it. I remember watching it, and I don't watch much horse racing. I watched that particular race. I forgot what race it was, but, I mean, he pulled up. He didn't pull up, but he got beat there at the end, and ultimately he would lose, and he would not get the Triple Crown. But I just remember that and the excitement surrounding that whole thing and the excitement surrounding the Triple Crown, and it should be interesting. I mean, I was looking forward to watching this particular race to Belmont today. But because of what happened and because of I'll have another pulling out of this particular race and ultimately retiring, I don't think I'll be watching. And that sound you just heard is my TV set turning away and turning off the Belmont. I will not be watching. And well, somebody will, but I don't think I will be. And I think those casual fans, the casual horse racing fans, the fans like myself who, I wouldn't even call myself casual, but the fan who really is not into horse racing, you lost that particular fan because of what transpired on Friday. It is what it is in a lot of ways, but, I mean, you've lost that particular fan, and it's life. It's life, and we'll see. We'll see how many people do actually watch this particular event today, Saturday. But again, it's a big weekend for sports, and good weekend, a big weekend to be alive, and especially if you're a sports fan. And I'm happy to be alive and happy to be able to watch and see if Manny Pacquiao will go down tonight. If the Miami Heat and the Big Three, if they will go down tonight. I mean, a lot of intrigue about this Game 7. A lot of intrigue with this Game 7. I'm looking forward to seeing what is going to happen. What will happen? Who will come up big? Who will come up small? Who will advance to the NBA Finals? And I don't have a rooting interest here per se, but if I'm going to root for a team, I think I'm going to root for the Miami Heat just because I think it will be a better NBA Final with the Heat and Thunder in comparison to the Heat, excuse me, in comparison to the Thunder and the Celtics. I just think it's a better. You'll have a better NBA Final with the Heat and Thunder playing. I mean, I just think it'll be a better NBA Final. I remember that game in the regular season those two teams played. That was one of the better basketball games I've seen in a long, long time. I mean, that was a great regular season basketball game, and it almost had a playoff-like atmosphere. It had a playoff-like atmosphere when those two teams played. So, if in terms of the better matchup and the best matchup, I really want to see OKC, Miami Heat in the NBA Finals. That's the matchup I'm rooting for. But hey, like Derek Anderson said, you cannot count out the Boston Celtics. That is a team that is championship tested. They're a tough team, and this run is similar to the run they had back in 2010. And that particular run, they went through, it was LeBron's last year in Miami. And that particular run, it was an interesting run for a lot of reasons because, first of all, you didn't expect it. And they went through the Cleveland Cavaliers, LeBron's last year, and they beat the Cavaliers in six. And at that point, I mean, obviously the big storyline was in terms of LeBron James and where he would go. But ultimately, he would end up and took his talent to Miami. But that year, the Celtics, we didn't expect the Boston Celtics to get that far. We didn't expect them to beat the Cleveland Cavaliers. We didn't expect them to do it. We didn't expect them to get as far as they did. And they got far. They got to the NBA Finals in Game 7. If they had a healthy Kendrick Perkins, who knows what could have happened. If Kendrick Perkins was healthy in that Game 7, who knows what could have happened. But obviously he was not healthy, and we all know what happened. But if I look at that particular run by the Celtics, the thing about this run and that run, it was unexpected. It was unexpected, and Celtics did benefit from they did benefit this time around from Derrick Rose going down with his ACL injury. I don't think the Celtics would have beaten the Bulls in the second round of these playoffs, but they were fortunate enough to play the Sixers in the second round, a team that they were better than, the team that had home court advantage against in that particular round. So I just really see this situation and see this run very similarly to the run I saw in 2010. And it's ironic that the Celtics are going to have to go through LeBron James the way they went through LeBron James. And granted, they went through LeBron James in the semifinals, not the conference finals. they ended up going against the Magic in the conference finals. They went through them, and they didn't have home court advantage in that particular series. The Miami, not the Miami Heat, but the Orlando Magic had home court advantage in that series. And you remember, Boston won those first two games in Orlando. They just really took it to the Magic in that particular series, and they were just on another level. And at that point in 2010, there was thought that the Big Three were done. The thought was that the Big Three were done. And we fast forward to 2012, 2 years later, we still have the same mindset now and the same thought process and the same belief that the Big Three is done. You still have that same belief. You still think and believe that the Big Three is done. And, you know, they were fortunate again, fortunate that Derrick Rose tore his ACL. They were fortunate in that respect. They were very fortunate there. First round, I mean, you can even make an argument maybe they were fortunate that Al Horford did not play that whole series. You can make that argument. But even then, even if Al Horford was there, you could make the argument that the Celtics would have still won that series. But you look at it, the Celtics went through Atlanta, went through Philadelphia, and were fortunate there against Philadelphia. And now they're in a Game 7 against the Miami Heat. And no one expected them to be in a Game 7 against the Miami Heat. A lot of talk was that the Heat would win this thing in 5, if not even sweep the Celtics, especially after many people watched the Celtics struggle against the Philadelphia 76ers, a team that some people believed that the Celtics should have ran right through. But if you look at it, if you really take a close look at the Sixers and Celtics, the Sixers were a team that played the Celtics very well in the regular season, and the Sixers were a team that defended very well, and they can defend. And they've defended throughout the course of these playoffs, and they defended against the Boston Celtics. That's the only reason they weren't able to stay in those games, because they were able to defend the Celtics. And their defense kept the Sixers in that particular series. And their defense was the reason that the Sixers were able to get to 7 games against the Celtics. You can also make an argument that the Sixers just had a little more scoring punch. They just had that extra scoring punch, they would have gotten by the Boston Celtics. That's an argument you probably could have made. But the reality is the Boston Celtics have survived, and they continue to survive, and they're in a Game 7. They're in a Game 7. A Game 7 against the Miami Heat, and such an intriguing Game 7, because also the possibilities of the breakup of the Big Three. I mean, that is that possibility. There is that possibility. Derek Anderson doesn't believe they should break up the Big Three. They should just try to find more pieces around them. It should be interesting to see if they can do that, and whether or not in terms of cap flexibility. In terms of are they going to be able to get somebody in there, you're probably going to have to ask guys to come there, and guys who really want to win a championship, you're going to probably have to ask those guys to come on, and guys who are willing to take less money in order to play for a title, play for a championship. So that might be the position that the Miami Heat are in. So I guess theoretically, if you're talking about moving somebody, it would be Dwayne Wade, I would think. And I guess the logical place could be where Dwight Howard is in Orlando, or even where Andrew Bynum is in L.A. I mean, you could look at that and say, well, maybe we need to add another big because we're okay on the perimeter with LeBron James. So maybe we add another big to go with Bosch and add an Andrew Bynum or a Dwight Howard. I mean, that could be a possibility. That would be an intriguing situation there. So, I mean, we'll see. And I think the Miami Heat will win tonight, and I think ultimately the Miami Heat will get to the NBA Finals. Again, I had this NBA Final tabbed at the beginning of the year. I had the Heat and Thunder in the NBA Finals, and ultimately I had the Miami Heat winning this the NBA Finals, and ultimately being the 2012 NBA champions. But we shall see. And just like we talked about with OKC and San Antonio, where I had OKC winning in 6, and I think if a lot of people had to do it over again and made the prediction of OKC and Miami in the NBA Finals, I think a lot of people would or will pick OKC rather than the Heat. But again, I think OKC has the firepower, but I think the advantage that they have is in the half court. In terms of transition, I think Miami can run with those boys. But in terms of the half-court set. I think OKC has the advantage. I think OKC is the better half-court team with the guys that they have and the ability that those guys have coming off screens and doing the things that they do. So, again, we shall see, and that's what makes this game so intriguing, the possibilities. The possibilities of the breakup of the big three. And the Boston Celtics, one last hurrah. I mean, all those things make for an intriguing ball game tonight and make for a very interesting game tonight. Game 7, Heat, Celtics, for it all, the winner goes to the NBA Finals. And yesterday, we had some history in the game of baseball. I remember last week we talked about a no-hitter. I know now Johan Santana's no-no. But this time around, we got a combined no-no. Kevin Millwood, he went out with an injury in the sixth inning, a groin injury, so he stepped out. And his other pitchers in the bullpen took over. And ultimately, those guys would combine for a no-no. A no-no. You have Charlie Furbush, who came in for Kevin Millwood. You have Brandon League, who came in for Kevin Millwood. I mean, you've had a few players who came in for Kevin Millwood and had his back in this particular ball game. And in coming in, those guys continued Millwood's dominance, and ultimately that dominance would lead to a combined no-hitter for the Seattle Mariners. Six pitchers combined for the no-hitter. Six pitchers. Furbush, we talked about. Charlie Furbush was one of them. Stephen Pryor, another. Lucas Letiche, another. I don't even know if I said his name right. Brandon League, another. And Will Willingham closes it out, gets the save, and a no-no, a combined no-no. Six players combined for a no-hitter. And that's a hard thing to do. That is a hard thing to do, but that's a fun no-hitter. I would call that a fun no-hitter. Six players combined on it. You wonder who gets the baseball. All those guys did their work in this particular game, and six players combined for a no-no, and they got it done. They got it done, and the Seattle Mariners are a team that got a no-no against the Los Angeles Dodgers. And you wonder if Millwood would have stayed in the game if he would have been able to keep the Dodgers at bay in terms of hits. It might have been a blessing in disguise in terms of a no-no, in terms of history, with Kevin Millwood going down with that groin injury. Maybe it was a blessing in disguise. I mean, it's crazy. It's very odd. Six players combined for the no-no. The no-no, the no-no, the no-no. I mean, this was an unusual no-no, obviously. A very unusual no-no. It doesn't happen like this normally. It does not happen like this. And it's crazy. I mean, this is the fifth interleague no-hitter. And one of those interleague no-nos was a combined deal, six pitchers with the Houston Astros against the Texans. Texas Rangers, I should say. So, I mean, it's something about interleague play and combined no-hitters. It's just something about it, I guess. I mean, it's just something you don't see, obviously, on an everyday basis. And to see something like that, it's very interesting. Very interesting to see that. Six players combined for a no-no. History was made. Interleague play. And we talk about interleague play, and it hasn't run its course. I mean, I remember many years ago when it first came into existence, being in Philadelphia, the talk was, okay, well, now you'll be able to see Ken Griffey Jr. when he was with the Mariners. Now you will be able to see guys like Ken Griffey Jr. come to Veterans Stadium. That was the talk then. Now it's almost like the intrigue and the thrill is gone again. Unless you're in Chicago, unless you're in New York, not many people care as much as they did about interleague play. Unless you're in those cities where you have that natural rivalry, where you have teams separated, teams in the same city separated by not a lot, you have that intrigue, and that's when it's exciting. But when you don't have, when you end up having other type of situations, other type of matchups that are really not as exciting, Toronto, Atlanta, Washington, Boston, Houston, Chicago White Sox, those things are not exciting, and I think interleague play in that respect, when you see that, it's not as exciting. It's just not as exciting, but we'll see. I mean, interleague play, I think, is here to stay, and it definitely was exciting when it first came around, and I mean, it's still somewhat exciting, but it's not as exciting as it was many, many years ago when it first came into existence. But it still goes on, and again, we had some excitement last night. Six players combined for the no-no. And that was excitement, and so we'll see. We'll see if interleague play, if we'll continue to have that excitement throughout this weekend. We'll see if it'll continue with the excitement. The excitement will still be there. If the intrigue will still be there. If the thrill still will be there. We'll see. We shall see as interleague play continues throughout the course of this weekend. And been some talk this week about Terrell Suggs and how he hurt his Achilles. A lot of people were saying, and right now, as of now, the Ravens will not take any money away from Terrell Suggs, but witnesses have told ESPN that Terrell Suggs injured his Achilles by playing basketball. By playing basketball. He injured his Achilles by playing basketball. And the Ravens, because of that, had the option of putting him on a list that he doesn't want to be on, and that is the non-football injury list. And that would allow them to recoup some of the $4.9 million they're supposed to pay him this season. So that would allow the Ravens to possibly do that. But, I mean, Terrell Suggs had said that he injured his Achilles by practicing by working out, essentially. By practicing his conditioning tests and working out. He basically said that's how he injured his Achilles. Reports are he injured his Achilles. Witnesses are saying he injured his Achilles by playing basketball. That's what some of the witnesses are saying. How true it is, I don't know. I don't know. But ultimately, the bottom line is this. If your Terrell Suggs, your concern would be if money would be taken away from you. The Ravens are not going to do that. It's probably a smart move on the Ravens' part. You don't want a guy that's a big part of your team to be mad at you and be mad at management. So it's probably a good idea on the Ravens' part for them not to take money away from this guy. And ultimately they decided that they will not dock his pay. They will not take away money from him. They will not take money out of his pocket. And so, it's a very fortunate situation for Terrell Suggs. Because, again, you don't want to mess with people's money. You don't want your money messed with if you're Terrell Suggs. And so his money will not be messed with. He will be able to keep his money. And hoping he can return. He says he'll be able to return this season. If you're a Ravens fan, hopefully that does happen. If you're a Ravens fan, you hope you get him to come back. You hope that he's able to come back this season. But we shall see. We truly shall see. And another interesting story. Brian Banks, he was a star middle linebacker coming out of high school. He was attracting interest from places like in colleges like UCLA, Ohio State, to name a few. And his dream ended when he basically, there was an accusation made against him in 2002 of rape. He pleaded no contest. Ultimately, he was sentenced to prison. And ultimately, the person who made the claim recanted. So now, spending all that time in prison, all that time, I mean, 5 years. 5 years, giving away your life, giving away 5 years of your life. And that's tough. Giving away five big years, five good years of your life. Giving that away for a false accusation, for something you didn't do. That's got to be tough. That's got to be tough. And that's the situation that Brian Banks is in, was in now at this point. And now he's going to get an opportunity, apparently, with the San Diego Chargers. And they're interested, I should say, in holding a tryout for this man. So hopefully he can do well, and hopefully he can relive his dreams, or at least have an opportunity at his dreams. Hopefully. Hopefully. I mean, again, you get 5 years taken away from you. 5 years, I mean, that's a long, long time, especially in your 20s. 5 years. 5 years. In your 20s, and you're giving it away because of a false accusation. That's got to be tough. That's got to be tough. I mean, if you did it, you did it. But he didn't do it. So, I mean, that makes the situation even worse. If he did it, he did it. But he didn't do it. And so he has no business being locked up. Being locked up or getting locked up for that 5 years. I mean, he had no business. That should not have happened to him. But it did. And now he has an opportunity now to hopefully make the best of this particular situation and hopefully get another shot at changing the course of his life and get another shot, hopefully get a shot at playing in the National Football League. 5 years is a long time. 5 years is truly a long, long time to give away. A long time to give away. And speaking of a guy who's going to be giving away some time, 87 days, Floyd Mayweather, reports came out that Mayweather, and I talked about this last week, but Mayweather probably won't be able to, not probably, but Floyd Mayweather won't be able to see the fight, won't be able to see Manny Pacquiao, Timothy Bradley this weekend as he lays up in a prison cell in Las Vegas, so he will not be able to see him. You wonder, on the surface, yes, he may not be able to see the fight, but you wonder if he actually will be able to see the fight, if you know what I mean. You wonder if certain things or certain hookups, certain situations, certain people may take care of Floyd tonight. You wonder if people are going to be able to take care of Floyd tonight and allow him to watch the fight tonight. Floyd does have a lot of money, and who knows? I mean, maybe Floyd throws some money the way of some correction officer at Clark County Prison, and maybe they'll be able to get Floyd the hookup. Give Floyd the hookup. But again, at this point, reports are Floyd will not be able to see the fight. He will not have access to a pay-per-view fight, to the pay-per-view fight, I should say, tonight. I guess if you're Floyd Mayweather, that's got to be a frustrating thing. But, I mean, Floyd says he's really not concerned about Pacquiao anyway and not concerned about watching his fight anyway. He's been on record as saying that in the past. So we'll see. We'll see if he actually will be able to see the fight. We'll see. We shall see. And it's going to be a good fight tonight, an interesting fight, a fight with a lot of intrigue. Many people are saying that Timothy Bradley has been the best fighter that Pacquiao's been going to face in years. And the weigh-in yesterday, Willie Rose talked about it, but Tim Bradley looked very, very ripped, looked in tip-top shape, tip-top condition as he prepared for this fight, obviously. And at the weigh-in yesterday, he looked good. He really, really looked good at that weigh-in yesterday. The body seemed to be in tip-top shape. Pacquiao, not so. Not as ripped as we've seen Pacquiao in the past. not as ripped as he's been in the past. He wasn't ripped. He was not ripped, but obviously I think he's going to be in tip-top shape. And there were situations with his wife, and, you know, at one point she was going to file or did file for divorce, and she's still with him right now, and obviously she's taking that back. But he's had a religious awakening at this point. He's had some issues with gambling. You wonder if we'll see a distracted Pacquiao tonight. Will we see a distracted Manny Pacquiao tonight as he goes against Bradley? Will he be distracted tonight? That should be interesting. That should be very interesting. I'm wondering tonight. I'm concerned and I'm wondering whether or not I should purchase this fight tonight. And for the simple fact is Tim Bradley is known for headbutts. So with that being said, could I be up against a possible technical decision after the third or fourth, after the fourth round? Am I in line for something like that where they're going to have to go to the scorecards because of an accidental headbutt? Will my $54, will I lose out on my $54 because of an accidental headbutt? And that is a part of my dilemma as I decide on whether or not I want to purchase this fight for tonight. That is the dilemma I'm running into right now. Do I purchase this particular fight with the possibility that this fight will end early because of an accidental headbutt? I mean, that's not something I want to see, and that's not, I mean, I spend my good hard-earned money, and I don't want to see only 3-4 rounds of this fight because of a headbutt. And Bradley is known for those butts. He's known for those butts. I remember the fight against Devin Alexander, the fight that ended because of a headbutt, an accidental headbutt. I mean, so he's known, and you have Nate Campbell a few fights before that, accidental headbutt with Timothy Bradley. He's known for butting guys. And maybe that's a part of his arsenal, the 1-2 and a headbutt, a la Bernard Hopkins. But Timothy Bradley is a guy, he's hungry. He has a lot of heart. And he's a guy that's going to come hard tonight. He's going to be very game against Manny Pacquiao tonight. And no matter, I think, what happens, I think we're going to see a close, close fight. We're going to see a close fight. Because Timothy Bradley brings a lot to the table. Bradley brings a lot to the table. This man is no slouch. He brings a lot to the table. And so I expect him to bring a lot to the table tonight against Manny Pacquiao. Whether he beats Pacquiao, that's going to be interesting. That's going to be the interesting thing. Bradley's fast, but will he be as fast as Pacquiao? And the thing about Timothy Bradley, he can make a fight dirty. He can dirty up a fight, and he has the ability to do that. Will he do that tonight? Will he make this thing dirty? And is that his shot? Is that his only shot in some respect to make this thing dirty? The favorite, obviously, is Pacquiao. But Timothy Bradley is a live underdog, a very, very live underdog tonight. A very, very live underdog. I wouldn't be shocked if Timothy Bradley won tonight. I wouldn't be shocked at all. Because he is a guy that brings a lot to the table. He's a tough, tough fighter. He's a tough guy. He's a very tough guy, and he seems to be in tip-top shape. Plus now, this is his opportunity on this big stage. He has an opportunity now on this big stage to now put himself in that elite status, that Mayweather, that Pacquiao, that pound-for-pound Andre Ward-type status. He has an opportunity now to do that. And this is his shot. This is his chance. We'll see how well he does tonight. I'm interested. I'm intrigued. But my only concern, and I stated that a few minutes ago, but my only concern is this. My concern is I spend X amount of money on this particular fight, and then this fight ends in a technical decision, or a no contest for that matter, because of an accidental headbutt. And that's the concern I have. So what do I do? What do I do tonight? Do I purchase this fight? Or do I decide against purchasing this fight because of the possibilities of an accidental headbutt? What do I do? I have a decision to make, everybody, a big decision to make. And hopefully I make the right decision. I could possibly miss out on a possible fight of the year type of fight. Or I could be a genius tonight and miss out on a technical decision or a no contest fight because of an accidental headbutt. So I have a decision to make, a big time decision to make tonight. My concern, I want to buy this fight, but my concern is an accidental headbutt and me losing out on $54.95 plus tax. I don't want to do that. But let's bring in a guy who knows a lot about the sport of boxing and a guy who wrote a nice column on BoxingScene.com about this particular fight, the one, the only, Cliff Rold, BoxingScene.com. Cliff, how are you, sir?
Hey, what's going on, bud?
Thanks for joining us.
Okay, I just have to tell you, Paul, I just heard your lead-in. You got a 54.5. You can never pick the headbutt. It's too rare. You got to bet that the fight's going to be good.
Cliff, we're breaking up. You're breaking up, sir.
Oh, sorry about that. Let me. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Okay, sorry about that. Let me step somewhere where maybe I'm in a bad spot here. Okay, Joe, I was going to say, I heard your lead-in, and I think you can spend the $64.95, Paul, to be a good fight.
So you're saying I should do it?
Absolutely. Look, this whole thing about Timothy Bradley and the headbutts is a legitimate concern. But it's a legitimate concern any time a southpaw fights a right hander who's aggressive. How many
okay.
Bradley fights ever ended on a headbutt? Nick Kent didn't need headbutts to play a whooping on Senior Witter or Peterson at the hole when he got off the floor twice. You know, he has a lot of ways to win without the head. The headbutt thing is really overrated with Bradley. Yeah, he throws the right hand with the head. So did Evander Holyfield. Most of his fights made it through the night, too. So I think this is a very good action fight. And for fans out there who are worried about the NBA game, it won't start until the game is over, so you'll have a chance to see both events.
And, Cliff, I read your article today, BoxingScene.com, the pre-fight preview of this particular fight. And you almost changed your pick because of what you saw on the weigh-in. Tell us about that.
You know, that's just – Manny's chest wasn't as deep. He looked lean. You know, when I saw the training footage from Manny, one of the things I noticed is he looked lean. And I think he was training for speed. I actually thought – the way he looked, that he might come in around 140, 141, and go for speed tonight. Now, he may still be doing his strength and conditioning coach, Alex Ariza, has made statements to say that he tried to, you know, really hydrate Manny so they can avoid some of the cramping issues they've had in the past. He's come in a little bulky in recent fights. I just don't know what that means. He's 33 years old, 147 on the dot is the highest weight of his career, and he's fighting a guy who has a lot of endurance. If this fight goes deep, you know, does he have the stamina to hang in there? I think he does. He's Manny Pacquiao. He's never showed up half-assed as far as his training for a fight, so I think he's got that going for him. But it did make me kind of wonder. You know, he didn't look as tight and as conditioned as we're used to.
And Cliff, I mean, Pacquiao. Last time we saw Pacquiao was against Marquez. He had some struggles there, but I'll argue he'll struggle against Marquez on his best night. But in that fight, did you see any slippage?
I didn't see slippage. I saw two guys who know each other very well. I mean, one of the things about the Marquez fight, I actually had Pacquiao winning narrowly. I know that, you know, there's been a pretty good split among the boxers thought that Marquez won the fight. I give a lot of weight to that. You know, I think Pacquiao landed more than he got credit for, but I didn't see slippage. I just saw a guy who knows Manny Pacquiao, who knows how to fight him, who knows how to give him hell at the time. I saw all three of their fights were razor thin. All three of the fights could have went either way. And I think what happened to the Marquez fight was for a fault of the punditry and the people who assumed Marquez was done, just like they did before they fought the second time. I mean, Marquez struggled with Barrera. We knew Barrera was on the other side. So it kind of had people thinking, you know, maybe Marquez waited too long for the second fight. Didn't turn out to be true. Then Marquez goes out. He has two beastly fights, you know, with Juan Diaz and Michael Castitas. He wins the Diaz rematch. His only bad night is against Floyd Mayweather, who's just a style nightmare for Juan Manuel Marquez. Marquez has never looked good against other counterpunchers. It's just not his style. Right. So, you know, I think we undersold Juan Manuel Marquez more than Pacquiao looked bad. Pacquiao looked like you're supposed to look when you're fighting another elite opponent you challenged. The fight that concerned me more was the Shane Mosley fight, where I thought that, you know, Pacquiao looked like he was there, you know, the guy that was basically dead in front of him, that he didn't want to hurt, that he never went for it. And I wondered if, you know, maybe he was losing a little fire there. I think we'll see tonight where he is mentally and at this stage of his career at 33 years old.
And you talked about it. I mean, he had the religious awakening, renewed commitment to his faith. You had the situation with his wife. They are together. But could we see a distracted fighter tonight?
No, I don't think so. I don't think religion distracts fighters. I think he's had quite a few months. I mean, if he's feeling, you know, sort of clean inside because of religion or because, you know, he got caught up with some other lady drama, which he definitely has committed to, I think that was a bigger issue going into the Marquez fight. I think it's analogous to, you know, when Ali and Frazier fought the third time, people thought Frazier was done. He gave Ali, you know, maybe arguably the greatest heavyweight fight in history in their third fight. And, of course, you know, legend has it that the night before or a couple nights before Ali, Frazier 3, you know, Ali's wife showed up to have it out with him because he introduced the woman who would eventually be his third or fourth wife as his wife to the president of the Philippines. And his actual wife at the time, she didn't take kindly to that. So that was a distraction. I think that the problems with Jinky were a big distraction for the third fight. It's very hard when you're having strife at home. But I don't think that distraction carries over to this.
We're talking to Cliff Roll, BoxingScene.com. And Cliff, Roy Jones said that he felt that Bradley needed to make this a rough fight in order for him to win. What do you think Bradley needs to do to win this fight?
I think Bradley needs to constantly be changing speeds. One of the things I like about Bradley, and I've liked Bradley Pacquiao as a fight since 2009 when Manny Pacquiao beat Ricky Hatton. That was really the fight that I would have liked to see as somebody who follows the sport regularly. I understand why they went to Cotto. Cotto was a big fight, great fight. We got a great night of boxing. But Timothy Bradley was only a month off of the Kendall Holt win, his first unification win at 140 pounds, right before Pacquiao and Hatton. And I think that one of the things that makes Bradley such a tough challenge is that he's a complete fighter. He doesn't have necessarily knockout power, but everything else, he compensates. He can box a low from the outside. He can throw the long right hand. He can get inside and work the body. He can throw off your tempo with wild flurries. He's very controlled. He knows how to fight. He's a very smart fighter. And I think if he changes speed at different points of the fight, if he goes out, if he comes inside, if he's constantly messing with the rhythm of Manny Pacquiao, he's got a great shot at pulling off the upset here.
Who has the advantage at this weight, 147?
I don't think there is an advantage. I've heard some people say, well, you know, Bradley's coming up from 140 for only the second time, and he didn't look that great against Luis Abregu. I think that's a nonsense argument. Ricky Hatton didn't look that great at 147 against Luke Collazo, but he looked a lot better as a fighter against Floyd Mayweather, even though he lost. The level of motivation a fighter brings can make a big difference in what the weight means. I don't think Bradley coming up to 147 is any sort of disadvantage, and I don't think that, you know, Pacquiao, who once was fighting at 26 and 30, is going to have any problem with somebody who is a moderately sized welterweight. I think this is a fight about who can implement their strategy, who is physically superior at this point. I think Bradley, you know, has a lot in his favor there at 28 years old. But it's about imposition of will. I don't think size is an issue.
And Cliff, the last month, we've had some cancellations because of performance-enhancing drugs. You had Berto, you had Peterson. Does boxing have a problem with this whole situation? Is it a problem in boxing?
Sports has a problem. It's not boxing. It's not football, which, you know, football has plenty of PED busts regularly, but they people don't, you know, overly focus on it because it's football, because it's such an exacting physical sport. Boxing, you have the sort of naked ability of one man to render another man unconscious. So,
right.
You know, there's an extra level of danger that even football doesn't bring. Football might hurt, the whole body works, but, you know, the threat of seeing someone beaten to death just doesn't exist in that sport. So it's a problem in boxing because you don't want people coming in, you know, Herculesed up. But I don't think it's a problem in boxing any more than it's a problem in sports. I think it's rampant. But I think it's rampant in sports. I mean, the only place where I think you've actually seen some cleanup is probably Major League Baseball. And you can see it in the way the power numbers have dropped off in the last few years. Their testing
right.
is working to some degree, and they're busting people, going to bust superstars. There are other sports where testing is still lax. I mean, you know, NBA testing is a joke, you know, for the most part. You don't hear about that, but, I mean,
no.
I think you would, if you looked, you would find it there. You find it in track and field. I mean, let's face it, does anybody think track and field is like still the most juiced up thing on the planet? And these are just sports are a problem with PEDs because when you put people work their heart out to the very best, the
right.
idea that someone else might be seeking an advantage is inherently an incentive for you to seek the same advantage, even if
Definitely.
It's just perceived.
And, Cliff, we had you on before the Mayweather-Cotto fight. We didn't get your take after the fight. Give me your take on what you saw, Cotto-Mayweather, May 5th.
It was a great fight. Absolutely great fight. If you remember when I was on the show, I thought it would be a very good fight. It actually exceeded my expectations. I had it closer than some people. I thought Floyd won clearly, but I thought Cotto won 4 or 5 rounds of the fight. It just goes to show, you know, silly pound for pound, where you aren't expecting to blow other guys all the time. And sometimes it happens if you put them in with the right people. I mean, you know, Roy Jones could look like a god against Richard Paul, but when you put him in with serious opponents like Eric Harding, Montel Griffin the first time, Antonio Tarver, those guys can make you look human because they're good fighters. And I think the same thing together. I mean, the expectations get so high sometimes because, you know, he runs a tough shot over an Shane Mosley or a Marquez, you know, that you forget that he's human. And Miguel Cotto is a hell of a fighter. And I think what we saw was a testament to the character of both men and a fantastic fight that was a long time coming.
And this week, you talked about Shane Mosley. We saw a lot of retirees this week. We got Antonio Margarito who stepped aside, Winky Wright who stepped aside, Shane Mosley who stepped aside. We see a lot of people retire, come back, and retire in the sport of boxing. Out of those three, do you see any of those guys coming back?
I think the most likely three to come back would probably be Antonio Margarito, if only because, you know, I don't know how he saved his money, and because he just seems sort of like a fighter, a guy who, you know, when it all comes down, boxing is what he does. He's a fighter, and I understand the controversy that has surrounded him the last couple of years, but he's a gritty guy. I think Mosley is done. I don't think Shane Mosley can fight anymore unless, you know, he gets into sort of financial trouble where he has to fight. And,
right.
you know, Winky Wright, I think Winky wanted to take another crack at it. He got in. He didn't have what he used to have. He gave a really nice performance for a guy off 3 years against Steve Quillen last week. And I think he's happy with his career. But I think Winky was always, you know, he always seemed to be cut from a little different cloth as far as his mentality. I think his ability to stay away will be the purest.
Right. And you look at Winky Wright, I mean, he wasn't active over these 3 years before the other night. And why do you think that was?
I think he got old. I mean, he's 37 years old. He wasn't getting the fights he wanted. You know, he wasn't getting the big names right away. He'd already, you know, accomplished pretty much everything he could, short of winning the middleweight title against Jermaine Taylor. What did he have left? I mean, there was just there was no reason to keep sitting. And maybe he just wanted to enjoy his life and play some golf and hang out with his kids. And, you know, if he wanted to come back and itch to scratch, that's great. But I think he had done everything he wanted to do. People forget, Winky Wright fought for his first world title in 1994. So even taking 3 years off, you know, his last big fight was, his last fight was in 2009. That's a 15-year span where he got some incredible business done at junior middleweight. You know, he rebuilt from the Vasquez loss in 94 in his first title fight, wound up winning every belt that was available at junior middleweight, unified three of them. Now, that's a great career. And when you've had that sort of success and you've made your money and you've got a nice family, you know, why not take some time off?
And, Cliff, we got to get your prediction tonight. What happens, Bradley, Pacquiao, who wins it?
I want to pick Bradley. So I've liked Bradley for a long time. I really think highly of Timothy Bradley as a fighter. I think he's going to bring it tonight. You know, but I just haven't been able to stack up on that one. I think Pacquiao is just, he's still a little too quick, a little too explosive. I think he can hurt Bradley more than Bradley can hurt him. I think it's going to go the distance. That's my take, although a knockout by Pacquiao would never surprise me against anyone. But I think it'll go the distance in a close fight, and I think Pacquiao will eke it out in what could be the fight of the year. I really think this could be a good action fight. You may even have people at the end who thought Bradley did enough to win, but I think Pacquiao will eke out the decision.
And, Cliff, talk about some of the great things going on at BoxingScene.com.
You know, just putting in work. I mean, we got a full staff, a full plate. You know, lots of coverage right now. Some big fights coming up. We expect Chad Dawson, Andre Ward to be signed soon for later in the year. Next week, you got Andy Lee and Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. Could be a lot of fun at middleweight. In August, recently signed, you've got Gennady Golovkin versus Dmitry Pirog. American fans don't know who they are, but tune in. Those are two bad middleweights. That's gonna be a very good fight. You know, there's some good things going on in boxing, and, you know, we just hope the momentum keeps going. And sign me up. Whenever Carl Froch is fighting again, I'm with that guy. I can't get enough of watching him.
Cliff Roll, BoxingScene.com. Check it out. He's got a preview of this big fight, Bradley Pacquiao, tonight. A great, great preview. Please check it out, BoxingScene.com. Cliff Roll, it was a pleasure talking to you, man. We wish you nothing but the best of luck, and let's do it again.
Absolutely, Paul. I look forward to it. God bless, brother.
Take care.
Take care.
Cliff Rold, BoxingScene.com. Big, 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 big fight tonight, Bradley Pacquiao. Cliff wants to pick Bradley, but he just can't do it. He believes that Pacquiao will get it done tonight, and we'll see. Maybe ultimately that would lead us to Pacquiao Mayweather when Floyd finally gets out of jail, and maybe. But I'm not holding my breath because I don't ever – I'm starting to think at this point I don't really expect ever to see that fight happen, and that would be truly unfortunate. But, hey, if Bradley wins tonight, then we're talking maybe Bradley Mayweather, and then, you know, who knows from there. But we shall see. Cliff told me to make the purchase tonight, and I'm going to think about it. I'm definitely going to think about it. But it's going to be an interesting fight, I believe. I just, again, and you know, he brought it up in an interesting point. You always have that possibility anytime you have a southpaw against a conventional fighter. You always have that possibility, or the possibility of headbutts. And so we shall see if headbutts will play a role in the fight tonight. I'm looking forward to it. It should be a great night in Vegas, and I'm debating at this point. I'm still debating whether or not I will purchase this fight, but, I mean, I think it's going to be a good fight. And I'm still in debate mode right now, and I'm going to stay in debate mode for a little bit. But we shall see. We shall see. We shall see what happens tonight. Pacquiao, Timothy Bradley, 147. Who gets it done? Does Bradley, or is Bradley able to overcome Manny Pacquiao, overcome his abilities, his speed, his power? Is Timothy Bradley going to be able to overcome that? And I think also something we need to take into account in this fight, in terms of if it's a close decision, will Bradley be able to get a close decision with so much riding on I mean, both of these fighters are promoted by Bob Arum, but with so much riding on the possibility of the mega fight, which is Mayweather and Pacquiao. So we shall see tonight, but I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait to see it. If I'm going to purchase it, I'm not sure. Still debating, but I'll see. I got to think about it, talk to the wife, see what she wants to do, see if it's okay, get permission, and we'll see from there. I want to thank Derek Anderson for stopping by, former NBA star. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Derek L. Anderson and check out some of the great things he has going on with his Victory Water and all the great things he has going on there. Also, I want to thank Willie Rowe for stopping by and joining us for the first hour. We had a lot of fun with Willie. And also I want to thank Cliff Rold, BoxingScene.com. Check him out. He's got a great, great article about the fight coming up tonight. You can listen to this show and other great shows at blogtalkradio.com/PGAN, where you can listen to this show and other great shows. Follow us on Twitter at GoForItGann and also friend us on Facebook at Paul Gann. For everybody here at GoForIt, see you later. Take care. Bye.